The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Again, Jesus left the district of Tyre and went by the way of Sidon to the Sea of Galilee, to the district of Decapolis. And people brought him a deaf man who had a speech impediment and begged him to lay his hands on him. He took him off by himself away from the crowd. He put his finger into the man's ears and spitting touched his tongue. Then he looked up to heaven and groaned and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately the man's ears were opened and his speech impediment was removed, and he spoke plainly. He ordered them not to tell anyone, but the more he ordered them not to, the more they proclaimed it. They were exceedingly astonished and said, "He has done all things well. He makes the deaf hear and the mute speak." The Gospel of the Lord.
A few weeks ago, I was in Rome, and I received an unexpected, surprising gift. I was able to go to the Scavi tour, which went under St. Peter's Basilica, where an excavation showed tombs of Christian martyrs as well as rich people of Rome at the time. And when I got to St. Peter's tomb, not the one that you see in the chapel, the one that you actually see a box with his tomb, and I was this far away from it, I kneeled down and I asked the guide to give us some time, and I pray for all of you at Holy Family. And I was overcome with a simple realization that I knew up here, but I didn't know down here. And the simple realization is this. Upon this rock, I will build my church. Modern excavation techniques have shown that since 1950, that this is indeed most likely the tomb and the bones of Saint Peter. Why? Because Christian legend has it that in the first century AD, a poor man's tomb was found in this place, and there was one sign. It says, "Peter was here." And when the Christians found out, they buried one another around Peter's tomb. And when the first basilica was built upon it by the Emperor Constantine, there was no record. So it wasn't until 1950 that we really, with modern archaeological evidence, to show that this is actually not just legend. This is the best of scientific knowledge, indeed, Peter's tomb. And yes, Peter had a lot of following, but what struck me was that these people didn't follow Peter. They trusted in God's promise. Upon this rock, I will build my church. And we know Peter. Good old Peter, like a lot of us. Promise more than he could keep. Preach more than he practiced. And also by legend, Peter, who ran away from Rome in that movie Quo Vadis, ran away from Rome because it was burning, because they were persecuting Christians, and he met Jesus on the road, and Jesus asked him, "Where are you going?" Quo Vadis. And he realized, "Oops, I'm running away." And he came back to face the inevitable. And he asked not to be crucified like, "My Lord, I'm not worthy," upside down. It is on this flawed, broken human being But God keeps God's promise to build the church. I've been to St. Peter's Basilica 3 times, and I don't know about you, I'm not in Catholic bling-bling. And St. Peter is way, those of you who like St. Peter, wonderful for you, but it kind of turned me off. It's too ostentatious, too whatever. But when I realized, sure, I don't have the same taste as all these people who build these big churches and who says, yeah, God is this. But it's the same faith. They trusted, in all these 2,000 years, trusted that God will build God's church in flawed, broken, even at times evil human beings. I don't need to say much. You know what's happening in our church. You know what's happening in the U.S. Bishops' Conference. We know more than ever that the U.S. bishops are way divided, anti-Pope Francis, pro-Pope Francis. And every day it seems like a little bishop comes out and kind of takes sides. But for me, I don't honestly don't know what's going on. I am deeply saddened. And I'm just going to add one priest apology for all of us priests who abandon, who support a structure which abandoned the least, the very people we promised to protect. And not only that, as a victim of sexual abuse myself, not by a clergy, the devastating effect takes years and years. And it is. We can't excuse this. This is horrible and unacceptable. And it's unacceptable that we build structure and we still continue to have the structure. I don't have much answers. I would recommend some ways to go forward. But I know this. God keeps God's promises in surprising, unexpected way. In the first reading from Isaiah was written 1,200 years before the time of Christ. So when Jesus comes along and he fulfills this promise of God, he makes the lame walk, the blind see, the deaf hear, the mute speak, and desert gives life. He witnessed, he fulfilled, he inaugurated that God keeps God's promise of what? Always to bring greater life out of death situations, out of horrifying situations that oftentimes we perpetuate. This is the God in Jesus who fulfills. And in Jesus' horrible, horrible death, a death in which he entered all forms of human hell. So instead of reading the Nicene Creed today, I'm going to ask us to read the Shorter Apostles' Creed. And in it, there's a line that is not found in the longer creed. And the line is, do you know? And he descended into hell. This is a God who promises who enter any human hell to save us from within and to keep God's promise. How we'll be surprised by God in unexpected ways. And I look at my life. God surprises and show up in times in which I'm in tomb life fear, in which hell seems to break loose, in which my own selfishness and fear, and according to second reading, partiality, favoring those I like, those who are in the in crowd, those who have it together against the least, the marginalized, the people who stretches my circle of compassion. The second reading reveals that all of us have this partiality, this favoritism, this even at times judging the people who fit our standard and then oust the others. And yet when we acknowledge this, when we have to face our own personal sin, or that we are part of a complicit into a structure of sin. And Pope Francis used a term that no pope has used before. Other popes have used the culture of death, but it's the first time of any pope writing that says that the culture of death is in the church, in this case, by clergy, professional Catholics like myself. The culture of death. And this is real, and you and I can't run away from this. And I hope that each of us are not afraid to face this. Not afraid to ask the question, why am I a Catholic? Why am I still a Catholic? People like me have to ask, why am I a Catholic priest? We have to ask these questions, and we can't be afraid, because more than ever, because we can't let newspaper answer for us. We can't let other people answer for us, because why? It's your faith. It's my faith. It's not enough to say, well, I'm spiritual but not religious, because it's a Catholic faith, and we need to look at this. And more than ever, the church needs us to build in the church a culture of greater life. Why? Because we trust in a God who keeps promise, who will always bring greater life with our cooperation. I don't have the answers, but let me propose this. To follow Pope Francis' advice, to pray and fast for healing and reform in the church. Pray for people like Cambria, who's gathering a number of clergy and lay people in the diocese to say what we can do to move forward in reform. The church absolutely needs reform. But it's easy for you and I to throw rocks. The reform of the church begins with us. We are the church. We are that rock in which Christ promised to build his church. Yes, in St. Peter, yes, in Pope Francis, yes, in people like me, but yes, in each of us. And so for us to dare to ask the question, why am I a Catholic? Quietly, and you don't have to go into the internet and blast it, all that stuff. Begin at home first. And when we have doubt, when there's sadness, which is plenty, and shame, can we turn to the Lord and say, Lord, this is where I am. What do you think? Are you still here? Bless you. And even if you turn and Jesus looks very sad, don't be afraid. His sadness may not be the end. It may turn to something else. The call to fast, the call to reform, the call to heal begins with you and I. Because upon you, upon me, upon this rock, I will build my church. And the church has never been perfect. And yet, God has kept God's promise. We don't know how we're going to get through this. With our faith, with God's promise. And God always keeps God's promise that God will bring greater life. And every time we go to Mass, we receive the bread of life. This mysterious, real presence of the one who's willing to enter all forms of hell. And we'll keep God's promise to bring greater life individually, in our family, in our community, in our church.